Potster Podcast, where politics, religion, and history collide, and it's not always polite.
Privilege, a special right, advantage, or immunity granted or available only to a particular person or group of people. I grew up in a home with two married parents. My parents were homeowners in a neighborhood on the southeastern edge of the city of Detroit, just blocks away from the old money suburb of Grosse Pointe. The neighborhood was pretty decent, at least when I was a kid, mainly middle class. My dad in particular was very protective of us kids. We were only allowed to walk or bike so far down the block, couldn't really venture out too far without them. Back in the 80s and 90s, this was considered unusual parenting. We never attended the neighborhood schools. My parents felt they were too rough, so they sacrificed a lot of creature comforts, like nice cars, remodels on the house, and so on, so we could attend local Catholic schools. While I was known as a bit of a nerd and wasn't socially popular, I did have friends, and most were like me too. Most had both parents involved in their lives, came from middle-class backgrounds, parents worked hard to put them in Catholic schools. At school, my teachers knew I was a good kid who came from a good family. I did well in my classes and earned mostly A's, the occasional B, never a C. As far as my mom was concerned, the A's were expected, the B's were a mild disappointment. Us kids weren't allowed to speak slang, and college was always talked about in our family as a when, not an if. I performed well on the ACT and SAT, and graduated valedictorian of my high school class. I earned academic scholarships to attend The Ohio State University. I double majored in political science and sociology and earned my BA, then went on to University of Cincinnati to earn my PhD in political science. I worked hard to make it where I did. Anyone who is as driven as me should be able to do what I did, right? Did I earn my grades in K-12? Sure. I never cheated, never asked for special favors, never expected to be treated any differently for any reason. Did I earn my high school diploma, bachelor's, and doctorate? Yes. I studied, I did the research, I wrote my own papers. The long hours, days, months, years working on my dissertation were rough, and the blood, sweat, and tears came from my own brow. Did I experience privilege? You bet. I am aware that not everyone grows up the way I did, so the tools and experiences I gained from my background aided me in some ways. Doesn't mean I didn't earn my accomplishments, but others who weren't born into my set of circumstances may have to work a lot harder to do the same thing, and even then, some may find it near impossible. Claiming equality already exists, while attempting to silence people who say otherwise, is betraying one's privilege. I am your host, Jay Poole. Recently, there have been a number of stories in the news concerning revelations that a number of prominent men are being accused of abusing their power to sexually harass and sexually assault people without fear of repercussions. The most prominent name in the news right now is co-founder of Miramax and the Weinstein Company, Harvey Weinstein, who is accused of sexual harassment, assault, and rape of over 60 women, including actresses and other women involved in the film business. Those who have come forward to accuse him of varying degrees of sexual misconduct include Rose McGowan, Angelina Jolie, and Daryl Hannah, among many others. The alleged behavior of Weinstein has been an open secret in Hollywood, alluded to publicly by big names in entertainment over the years, such as Gwyneth Paltrow, Courtney Love, and Seth MacFarlane. Weinstein also settled 8 lawsuits against actresses and employees of his companies over the past 3 decades. But exposés came out earlier this month from the New York Times, The New Yorker, and other media outlets, making this open secret very public. As a result, Harvey Weinstein was ousted from the Weinstein Company. The story has gained extra traction because of Weinstein's prominence in Hollywood, but also because of his political involvement as a Democrat who has contributed to the party's candidates and liberal causes. Many conservatives have seized on the story as an opportunity to go after President Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, who were friends with Weinstein. But the big neon elephant in the room is that while they go after those who supported an alleged serial assaulter and rapist, they support the presidency of an alleged serial assaulter and rapist. Revelations are coming out about a lot of powerful men, not just Weinstein or Trump, who has been accused by at least 16 women of sexual harassment and assault, and has been accused of rape at least twice. There was the expose of Bill Cosby before it, where dozens of women accused him of drugging and raping them over the decades. Earlier this year, there was Travis Kalanick, the head of Uber, that resigned after fostering a culture of unchecked sexual harassment against women at the company. Since Weinstein, multiple sexual harassment allegations against political journalist Mark Halperin and President George H.W. Bush have also been made public. Corey Feldman is working on a documentary exposing the other open secret in Hollywood, which is pedophilia and rampant child sex abuse. The floodgates are opening with people coming forward and speaking their truth. The hashtag MeToo that recently trended on social media is an example of people from all walks of life acknowledging that they are survivors of sexual assault, sexual harassment, or rape. Those who state that the United States and other countries have a problem with toxic masculinity and rape culture that allow these violations to go on unchecked with few non-victims speaking up are correct. After all, the survivors aren't violating themselves. But let me be clear. This issue is not a conservative problem or a liberal problem. It's not even just a gender or sexual predation problem. It's one facet of a larger, more widespread issue. It really is a problem of privilege. Many of us are willing to support the powerful without question, giving the powerful the benefit of the doubt, especially if the accused are powerful figures that we like. That empowers these people to continue to offend. Then we treat the accusers as if they are in the court of law, putting them behind the eight ball to prove to us lay folks they aren't lying, even though most of us are not lawyers and we are definitely not the judge or jury. There's a difference between acknowledging when we are not witnesses and dismissing out of hand people's experiences because they do not conform to our worldview or to the images we have of those we relate to or look up to. Privilege is when you think something is not a problem because it's not a problem for you. Pot Stirrer Podcast will be back after this. Did you know for today's episode, in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein sexual misconduct scandal and other high-profile cases, many people are talking about interpersonal relations in the workplace. As more women and people of color joined corporate America in the 1960s and 1970s, efforts have been made to encourage diversity in the workplace, whether it is affirmative action, which has benefited white women the most, to mandated diversity workshops for corporate employees. Over the years, much has been made of efforts to curb sexual harassment and to provide victims with ways to safely report incidents of discrimination without retaliation and with the expectation that there will be repercussions for the perpetrators. But did you know that even today, most women do not report sexual harassment? According to a 2016 study by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, 75% of women who have experienced unwanted or inappropriate advances from male colleagues have never bothered to report it out of fear of retaliation or of not being believed. And their concerns are well-founded. Of those who have reported it, 95% say they have not seen any consequences for accused men. Why is this? According to an article in the LA Times, a major roadblock is that human resources departments at many companies, where the reports of sexual harassment typically go, are in place primarily to limit legal and reputational damage for the company rather than to look out for the well-being of individual employees. This can create an incentive to sweep these accusations under the rug. In some cases, HR departments are not equipped or empowered to take up sexual harassment cases because they are built for recruitment rather than managing complaints, they do not report to the top officials at the company, or a toxic culture emanates from the top down. Experts say there are ways to mitigate or correct these issues. Suggestions include building an organizational chart with the HR head reporting directly to the CEO, and the company's board of directors doing audits on HR to assess risk. But these are only as effective as the will of those at the top. Now, back to Potstirrer Podcast. Because I went to high school in the Midwest, the standardized test most of my peers took when I was growing up was the ACT. So I took the ACT and the PSAT. The PSAT was conducted at my school, which is why I took it. The ACT was conducted at the local all-boys school a few miles from my house. But the scores on the PSAT pre-qualified me for certain academic scholarships, and so I had to take the SAT to be eligible to receive them. So I took the SAT too. The SAT was conducted at a local public school near downtown Detroit. It was my first time stepping foot inside a Detroit public school. The building was very old, kind of like my high school that was also in the city and very old, but that's where the similarities ended. This school was huge and easy to get lost in, and it had photos posted of some of the students, and there were a lot of awards and trophies. I don't remember if there were metal detectors. Most Detroit public schools had them, and keep in mind that this was in 1998, before Columbine. But to be honest, I don't remember if this school did. I used the restroom during the exam break, and was surprised and relieved to see that there was toilet paper. The local news did a story earlier in the year about students at this school being rationed squares of toilet paper by teachers while administrators got fancy new office furniture, so I guess they fixed that by the time the SAT rolled around. But there was a huge hole behind the toilet where there was this big void. I could see the piping, and probably asbestos. I thought to myself, that couldn't be safe. There were definitely signs of disrepair at this school. The crazy thing was, this was a magnet school and one of the best of the Detroit public schools, and at the time it was falling apart. If that was the best, what were the regular public schools in the city like? This memory has always stuck out to me, nearly 20 years later, because it was when I truly realized why my parents sacrificed to send me where they did. And none of it was my choice. I mean, when I was looking into high schools, I really tried to convince my parents to let me test for the Detroit Examination Schools of Choice. After spending middle school at Dominican Academy, which was a single-sex school, I wanted to go to a bigger school, and as a heterosexual teenage girl, I wanted to go to school with boys. After pretending to think about it, my parents said no. And I was going to Dominican for high school too. They felt like I would get lost at one of the schools of choice, and that the smaller all-girls environment at Dominican High School would be better for me academically and socially. My parents weren't rich, but felt they were making the best decision for me with the resources they had. And it was one of the best decisions for me that they ever made. Besides the advantages of going to a school not run by DPS in the late 1990s, the single-sex experience did something else, which I realized later on. I took an honors English lit course my first year at Ohio State. Some students were outspoken while others remained silent. It dawned on me after a few weeks that I was the only woman who spoke up in class. The others were men. In other courses and around campus, when I felt strongly about something, I had no problem speaking up and giving my thoughts on an issue. Being in the all-girls environment at Dominican High School taught me to be confident in my views, in my opinions. And I really didn't care if men thought that I was too outspoken or that I talked too much. Being in that environment made me more bold than I believe I would have been otherwise. I chose political science over sociology for grad school in part because I liked the additional challenge of going into a field that at the time was dominated by white men, but bringing my own thoughts and my own experiences to the table. Many white evangelical ministers and laity state that their worldview honors women and they abhor racism and ethnocentrism. Many even state that they don't hate LGBT people. But then they wholeheartedly embrace a leader who does the opposite of what they say they stand for. Their leader has shown disrespect of women, especially women who speak out against him, and most of all, women of color, has demeaned and spewed bigotry about different groups such as Mexicans and Muslims, has embraced Nazis and white supremacists, and put them on an equal plane with those who embrace equality, and has worked to make life more difficult for LGBT Americans. A running theme throughout both Old and New Testaments is that we are called to care for the poor, the sick, the oppressed, the immigrant, the widow, the imprisoned. There is a partiality for the least of these, those who lack privilege. The thing we need to understand about privilege is that it's not binary, because humans are not binary. It's not necessarily that you're privileged or oppressed. In some situations, you might be oppressed. In some situations, you might have privilege. Sometimes it's a mix of both. It's more nuanced than a binary. My being black, or being a woman, or being from Detroit, or having an invisible illness has led to certain experiences coming from that. The same can also be said for my being heterosexual, being Christian, coming from the family I did, or attending single-sex Catholic schools. But those identities are often easier to take for granted. In the United States, the Horatio Alger myth is so pervasive. Anyone can be successful in the United States, defined as being wealthy and having a comfortable life, by working hard. The other piece of that is that if you aren't wealthy and don't have a comfortable life, you didn't work hard enough. We praise people who achieve measures of success while judging those who don't. We don't see how our privileges make our lives a little easier. We say to ourselves and we say to our friends, if I can do it, why can't other people? But we need to recognize where we have privilege that others don't. I think of the criticisms made against men in Hollywood and politics for not speaking up in the Harvey Weinstein scandal. And it makes me think of something else. Those who are seemingly unaffected by an issue, should they take a stand or remain silent? Many people criticize football players in the NFL kneeling because they have made it financially and therefore are privileged. A black person of means is not immune to police brutality. Police brutality is not simply about poverty, and not every black person killed by police has been poor. And that's not to say that poor people should be killed by police either. Race and economics are related, but they are not one and the same, and the issue won't simply be solved by providing more educational opportunities for black people or otherwise lifting more black people out of poverty. But more importantly, these players are using their privilege, the privilege they do have, economic wealth and visibility, to call attention to an issue that affects mostly people who have no voice. For to whom much is given, much is required, which is why they are doing exactly what they should be doing. These are profiles in courage, as more of us should be willing to stand or kneel with oppressed people, even if it's not of personal benefit to us. To whom much is given, much is required, We need to be willing to have a degree of self-awareness, even when it results in seeing ugliness inside ourselves. To whom much is given, much is required. And besides that soul-searching, what can we do to support people who are being oppressed, who are being victimized, who are being discriminated against, who are dealing with challenges in one way or another? We listen, and we believe them. Check out our website today, PotSquarePodcast.com, for previous episodes, special presentations, announcements, merch, and all things PotStirrer Podcast. You can find our show on iTunes, Google Play, and most other podcatchers. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe, give us 5 stars, leave a review, share, and tell your friends. Thank you for listening and supporting PotStirrer Podcast. I'm Jay Poole. Let's fight for America's future, because freedom is not free.